welcome to the Excess Astrology Podcast. I'm Arwen O'Neill, and I'm here with my good friend Allison Price, and we are coming to you from Vancouver, Canada. Today we are going to be talking about the astrology for the two-week period of November 2nd through 15th, 2014, and our Astrology 360 topic for the day is Mars and Eris.
Yes, sounds good.
Yeah. So we're going to start with the planetary transits and ingresses for the November 2nd week. And the first thing that we've got happening is Mercury is going to go into Scorpio. And this is for the second time because it went retrograde a while back.
That's
and then
right.
It went back into Libra.
So it's going to have another go now.
Yeah, exactly. So Mercury in Scorpio is probing. I've got probing, paranoid, sarcastic, and seductive.
Yes, well, there you go.
It's a good range of qualities there. Good for digging into secrets.
Yes.
If you're prone to telling secrets as well.
It's that old thing, and they say, can you keep a secret?
Oh, yeah. People don't ask me that. It's a good thing, too. They just tell me. So November 9th is the next one, and that is Venus square Jupiter.
Okay.
So these are two benefic planets, and that generally means that any kind of aspect between them is not going to be that difficult,
yes.
Even though it's a square.
Yes.
But you might have some conflict between desires and ideals, or between your long-term goals and today's temptations, for example. That might be a thing.
Today's temptations.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And then on the 10th, we've got Mars conjunct Pluto.
That's important.
That's important. Yeah, that's the god of war meets the god of the underworld.
Right.
What could go wrong? I did a bit of historical sort of digging around to see how this aspect sort of plays out in the world. And what it seems to do is dig up dormant feuds that have been kind of on the back burner. It
right.
seems to sort of reignite any warring factions that have kind of had a truce or, you know, stalemate
okay.
or just had a, you know, any kind of peace talks. They tend to sort of fall through and battles can erupt again.
So the war's back on again. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. Mm. Whichever war that may be tends to happen.
I know. And because they're both through...
Scorpio, yeah.
Which brings to mind, you know, that saying, revenge is a dish best served cold.
Exactly.
And that's what Pluto will do. It'll take years to come around
right.
to it, but it will still get you in the end. It will never forget.
Yeah.
So when Mars comes together, perhaps we can
yeah.
expect some things to be dug up and...
Yeah, puts a fire under those dormant
yes,
cold...
put them back on the front burner.
Exactly, yep. So that's the 10th, and then a couple of days later we've got... Venus conjunct Saturn.
Mm.
So yeah, that's your aesthetic, romantic, or financial goals can gain support after
yes.
some afflictions that it had last week. So, you know, if you have any Venus afflictions happening with the square to Jupiter or some other stuff, then those might clear
up. It'll gain support from the Saturn, right?
From Saturn,
so
yeah.
Girls can tap up your dads for cash, I would imagine, on that day as well, right?
That's the advice we're giving, yeah. although, same day, we've got Mars square Uranus, so I don't know. Yeah, that might be, maybe not a good time to ask for money. Sudden eruptions and conflicts and accidents and injuries can occur
yes,
with that one.
Yes.
And because, of course, the Pluto-Uranus square is still
that's right.
very close to being exact. So that is what is going on with the planets.
Okay,
what's
so...
the moon doing?
The moon is always moving. So the moon phases that we have in this two-week period we're talking about today is on the first day, on November the 2nd, we've got the full moon in Taurus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's always a good full moon when it's in Taurus to have a dinner party.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Because as the moon rises, as the sun sets, it will put the glow over your dinner party, your
yeah.
7, 8 o'clock at night, whatever time that's going to be. And, of course, with Taurus to do with food and
oh, yeah, definitely.
Taking your time over a leisurely
yeah.
meal. Excellent time, so plan your dinner parties for that.
Sounds good. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And apart from that, new moon in Taurus? Full moon in Taurus? Financial, it has to be, right?
Mm. In the beginning of November, that's election time nearabouts, isn't it? But
I'm not sure. Yeah.
The 8th, generally? Yeah,
okay.
I'm not sure about this this coming one, because I don't know if that's a weekend or... But we've got elections coming up here in Canada, and I know
right.
they do in the US.
So. Oh, it's on the 6th, 7th, I think.
Is it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there we are.
Because I applied to work there.
Oh, wow. That'll be fun.
We'll see.
Bringing democracy to Vancouver.
And then on November the 14th, we've got the last quarter, that's in Leo. Mm-hmm. So what we're having during this period is the light is going from the full light and it's starting to go to the dark.
Waning.
It's waning into the dark. So things are winding down, things are slowing down, things are coming to an end in this 2-week period. So it's not a time to start things, it's a time to let things just stay their course or mm-hmm. run their course, should I say. And yeah.
Yeah. It's a bit of a slowdown before the holiday ramp up.
Yes. Imagine.
Yeah.
You've got to get on going with that, I think. So, yeah. So that's kind of what the moon's doing in this 2-week period. So it's just through the light to dark part of the cycle.
Excellent. Hmm. That's the moon. It's our current 2-week period. The 360 topic for the day is Mars and Eris. And the reason that we're putting them together like this is, of course, because in Greek mythology, Mars and Eris were brother and sister.
Yes.
In the Greek pantheon of gods. And they're sort of mirror images of each other, really. But of course, the Greeks and Romans in the, back in the day, you know, the ancients and whatnot, they were quite sexist. And so, of course, you know, you got Mars is like the, you know, the big strapping god of youth and male beauty and vigor. Of course, Eris is just the vengeful, you know, spiteful, jealous goddess who ruins people's lives for no good reason. Started the Trojan War, et cetera. We'll get into that. But so that's an interesting thing.
Yes, that they were both warriors.
They were warriors, yeah.
In battle, dress,
yeah.
Even probably when they didn't need to be, that kind of thing. You know, like soldiers out in
public. Well, you never know when you need to have the armor on, you know.
Right. So, doesn't that say something about the planets too?
Yeah.
So Eris is pretty new. Yeah, so maybe we can say a little bit more about that, hey?
Absolutely. So Eris was discovered on January 5th, actually, 2005. Discovered by the astronomer team of Mike Brown, Chad Trujillo, and David Rabinowitz.
Okay.
From a couple of different Caltech and whatnot. But basically, they are the three astronomers that are credited with discovering Eris. And
yes.
At first, they had a provisional name. Actually, Mike Brown wanted to call planet Xena, X-E-N-A, which was just his nickname for it. And that was the Xena Warrior Princess television show, which I actually used to watch. Which is an interesting bit of mythology that's actually crept into, I think, the delineation of, you know, what's come to be Eris, the goddess, the planet that astrologers have taken on. And, you know, this is just one of those interesting things about kind of culture and how things work out. I mean, first of all, like, it's the goddess of discord, basically. This is the Greek, you know, basis of the personality archetype of this goddess. It's just the goddess of discord and strife and, you know, kind of a warrior goddess, but not so much in a... All the other gods and goddesses of Greek mythology, they did jealous, sort of really bad, like deities behaving badly kind of things too, right? They would get jealous, they would fall in love with mortals, they would ruin, you know, people's lives for no good reason. But they would generally then have an attack of either conscience or honor or compassion. And, we've, you know, made him have his liver pecked out by birds. We'll make him a constellation or something as some sort of consolation prize. Or two lovers that wanted to escape. One of them was the, you know, the apple of a god's eye. And so they kill them, but then bring them back and make them whatever, something. and I'm mixing my myths here completely. But for Eris, there's no sort of redeeming compassion or honor or anything. It's just, it's all vengeance, mm-hmm. all that.
The fact that he named it Xena to start with.
Right.
And then it took on eventually the
because Xena actually had some redeeming qualities. Yes. She was actually a warrior that was in battle and then felt regret for all the harm that she had caused in her life as a soldier. Mm. So she then went on this mission to like just wander the earth and do good things for people and save people's lives or save their village, which was being, you know, ransacked by bad guys or what have you. Save women from evil men kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so she just did that. And that was her way of sort of, you know, penance, whatever, and redeeming herself in the world. And so I think that there's obviously a great deal to admire in that. And I think we've sort of morphed the two mythologies and taken a bit of that into even this very one-sided sort of mythology that we have for Eris, the goddess.
But I think the interesting thing is that even though maybe, I don't know where he came with his name from, that when the first name that these new planets get, that tends to be the nature of the planet.
It does. And that's the weirdest thing. There's no reason that should be true.
Except but it that does... astrology works.
Exactly. I mean, when Uranus was discovered, for example, famously, that was the time of revolutions in Europe.
Yes.
And the, you know, the Industrial Revolution. And this is 1781. And it was right around the time when we had democracy erupting and you know, the French Revolution and all sorts of crazy stuff that is exactly the Uranus archetype and science. I mean, the invention of steam engine and amazing
electricity, right?
Yeah, electricity, yeah. Exactly. And all these geniuses, sort of, it was the age of, you know, these amazing towering intellects. And that all happened right around the same time as Uranus was discovered. Neptune, it was discovered in 1848, right around the time of the Romantic movement of in art, in music, in like Rousseau with the noble savage and the whole idealization of primitive cultures and you know, they're not like ruined by civilization, right. And all of that, which is very Neptunian. The invention of photography, the invention of film, all of these things which are just now completely go hand in hand with the archetype of Neptune. Pluto was discovered in 1930, of course, right at the beginning of the National Socialist Party in Germany, and yes. the rise up to World War II, the most bloodshed that the planet had seen in however many year period, depending on which country you're speaking right. from the perspective of. But yeah, Eris did the same thing. Mm-hmm. They discovered it in 2005, and immediately, as soon as they wanted to say, well, this is a planet, it's bigger than Pluto, after all, you know, this is what got Pluto knocked off off the 10-planet exactly. chart. And it's exactly in keeping with the mythology of Eris, which is so weird.
Because the keywords that we used to have now for Eris is the female warrior.
Yeah.
And the...
Discord.
Strife and discord, yeah. Right? And even in English Cockney rhyming slam, the your trouble and strife right. is your wife.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So, you know, so with Eris also being the warrior and Mars, which is the male warrior, which is kind of more acceptable.
Right.
But Eris is coming on up now. And we see it, I think, as well in the movies now, where you've got these strong female...
Totally.
I'm even trying to think of the Laura Croft type that was slightly beforehand, or these other ones.
Alias was one.
So what you've got is you've got
these... assassin women, you know?
Exactly.
And they're not necessarily redeemable either. Like, some of them are just as just cold-blooded and... like Kill Bill. I mean, Kill Bill is fantastic. I love that. But that's Eris right there. She's going out for revenge, you know.
30 years ago, you would never, ever have a woman playing that type of role. It just was totally unacceptable. Yeah. But now, women are in the army.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And they never used to be. Years ago, let me tell you, when I started work and I wanted to get a job in a drawing office, I was told I couldn't go in the drawing office because women weren't allowed. And that was in the 80s.
In what kind of office?
Drawing office.
Drawing.
You know, mechanical drawing.
Oh, like an architect. Like,
yes.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes.
That's so weird.
I know. Those were the days, right? Oh. But things have changed. And for those who are coming up now, who are in their maybe 20s and 30s, they only know the world this way. Yeah. But those of us who are...
And what they see on Mad Men, maybe, but that's...
Yes. Right. But you all have to wear a skirt, you know?
Yeah.
And that's all kind of changed now. Women are expected to be strong, fit...
Lean
in the gym.
Yeah.
This is her. They're working out. They're using their body like they never have done before.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. Women are more toned. Well, those that are toned can definitely be toned within an inch of their lives.
Oh, yeah. Totally. And it's interesting, too, because, it's very appropriate, I think, for this time. Because, of course, feminism is like, let's say, the second wave of feminism that was the 70s. I mean, it was in a way, it was usurping the male position in the family and then taking the wife out of the home sort of environment.
Into the workplace.
Yeah. But it was, you know, it was still with the shoulder pads and the skirts and the stockings. Exactly. And there was, you know, there was definitely a masculine quality that needed to be sort of put on as a, you know, I'm in the male world now, but it was nothing like it is now. It was, if you look at the movies from back then, even... like something cheesy, like Working Girl from the 80s with Melanie Griffith and Sigourney Weaver. Like, they're all in these short skirts, high heels, stockings, huge shoulder pads with their hair done within an inch of its life.
That's how we went to work.
I'm not saying they were all like that, but...
That was how... the first job I had... Well, one of the first jobs I had when I worked in a mining house in Johannesburg. And there was a dress code for women.
Oh, yeah.
And you were not allowed to wear trousers to work. It was absolutely not done.
Yeah.
You had to wear stockings with closed toe shoes. And you had to fit in with this dress code.
Right.
Today, of course, it sounds crazy.
It sounds crazy, yeah. I think a lot of aside from just the women in the army, which is definitely, you know, as much as that seems like a rarefied tiny little percentage of the, you know, but it has such repercussions in all of society, I think.
Yes.
Just the idea of it, the idea that that's not something that is just, you know, closed off to women. It's, anyone can do that now. It's, you know.
You can be as fit.
Yeah, and just... women in helicopters, women in tanks, women, you know, like that's when they had, now I'm going to obviously butcher the story, but in Iraq, 2004. Actually, it's interesting timing-wise. Around 2004, the same time that Eris was being discovered, they had the there was some convoy that was taken. Maybe a dozen of them were taken prisoner, okay. And for a while they were being held in this room, and they had pictures, and there was this it was men and women like that were in this convoy, and I think they had been a medical convoy or something, and they were held for like 10 days, and then you know whatever, but. It was the first time we had seen female POWs, like women that were being held by an enemy, in a war situation. I think that really kind of shook people. If we knew that they were in combat, but that you know that really
we
kind of
seen it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And, but now the younger generation, and I'm talking younger, the 21-year-olds coming through now, accept the fact that they can do all these things,
totally.
To them it's absolutely normal.
Absolutely,
that women can take these roles and be strong in those roles.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah.
But it does say a bit about why insane sexism of the Roman and Greek mythologies, that Eris didn't have any redeeming qualities back then as a character. Because it's all about archetypes, and we have to sort of, you know, pastiche together this.
That's right. So what we have now is both men and women's charts. We have the Mars, which we've always been knowing about, but now we have Eris now showing her face, as it were. And it's actually only like the third one that's feminine, because if we take the Moon and Venus, they're the only two feminine planets, apart from the asteroids, which we're not talking about now. But now we have this third one, which is a female focus.
It's sort of the shadow of the female archetypes. It's, you know, it's definitely... but I do have a couple of... And this is an interesting story that was in 2005. The actual event happened in 2004.
Okay.
But I see this as just so perfectly archetypal of the Eris, you know, mythology. And this is a really interesting sort of reversal of it, and how that sort of revenge energy can be good in some cases. And it's not just when you're not invited to the party. You know? But here's this story came out in 2005, and the headline was "Arrest Us All: 200 Women Who Killed a Rapist in India." There was this local thug and his gang who were terrorizing this village of, it was a very poor village in India. It was 300 families that basically lived in this village. And this this gang had been murdering and raping, you know, young girls, women, and killing people. Like, they would leave bodies, like, out in the open for a decade. And everyone in the village knew that these guys were just horrible and bad, and that the police wouldn't do anything about it. They would be arrested, and then they'd be let
go,
free, and then they would go and get revenge on whoever had told on them. And it was just awful. And so at one point, this guy was taken in again to court, and 500 people from the village showed up to watch him be carted into court. And he, there's this quote, it says, it was 3 p.m., in case there's astrologers listening, the one who drew the chart here, 3 p.m., August 13th, 2004. Women, 200 women from the village came armed with vegetable knives and chili powder. As he walked in, he was spotted by one of the women that he had raped. He called her a prostitute and threatened to repeat the crime against her. The police laughed. She took off her sandal and began to hit him with it, shouting, "We can't both live on this earth together." And then all 200 women, like,
killed him.
Piled on.
Absolutely.
So that, I think, is the good side of Eris. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you need revenge.
Yes, absolutely. It's and part of the myth as well, as we were talking a little bit earlier, is that Eris is also a champion for women.
Right.
Strong women, bringing them forward. And if you're making your effort and pulling forward, she will support you and move you forward.
Yeah.
But if you're just falling by the wayside, then, then she will...
Falling back on the womanly wiles or...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's good for wherever it's placed, it's good for bringing forward your strong feminine side.
Yeah.
Whether that's acceptable or not these days, I'm not all sure. I don't think it always is, but it can be if we cultivate it nicely.
And if there's been an imbalance, you know, if there's an imbalance that'd be corrected or overcorrected in the case of this story, for example. I mean, but there are things like that you know, like these cases in colleges where they're like the football team with the these stories that we constantly are hearing. I mean, a situation like that. One of my favorite writers online, The Last Psychiatrist, has this article that basically ends in a paragraph about why didn't the other girls come to her defense?
Yes.
And why don't they? Women aren't taught to be brave that way. They're taught to protect themselves and to, you know, maybe avoid those situations. And if one of them is, quote unquote, stupid enough to get themselves into that situation, the rest of the women are like, oh, well, lucky it wasn't me or something like that. And the writer of this article was saying, well, that's, you know, men aren't taught that way. Men are taught, good men anyway, they're taught, you know, yeah, it's going to be dangerous. Stand up for that person. Mm-hmm. You know, that's your duty. So I think...
these are archetypes that we are ingrained with.
Yeah.
And because Eris is so new, it's only, what, 10 years in our consciousness,
yeah,
we were only at the very beginning of developing the side of the population.
Totally.
The culture.
Yeah.
So I do think that where Eris is placed, and this is an interesting thing because it always is in the same sign virtually now.
Yeah.
Eris is in Aries.
Yeah.
And has been since, what, 1910, I believe.
Yeah, it takes 560 years to go around the sun.
Yeah, so it's been in Aries. Like, for everyone who's alive today, who's an adult, it's got Eris and Aries.
Yeah.
And it moves very slowly.
Very slowly. And it's very eccentric, the orbit, too, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I know it can actually retrograde back over a position 11 times.
Oh, my.
So we think a three hit from Saturn something. Well, the one from Aries really just grinds along.
Yeah.
But this also means that because it doesn't move very far, we have to pay more attention to the actual house position and the aspects that are tight.
Yeah.
So
Do you have any aspects with Eris in your chart?
It's actually going to conjunct my midheaven.
Really? Oh, look at you.
Oh, I know. So
going into the mining.
So I get to the mine.
Yes.
We drive 100 kilometers home in my stockings. We get to the mine. And I'm supposed to go down and do all this stuff because that was my job. And the mine manager denied me access to the mine because women were not allowed to go underground.
My goodness.
But they couldn't tell me that 3 hours earlier when I left Johannesburg. So this was a whole thing. And
so you were hired. They were expecting you.
Yes, and I had to cool my heels in the waiting room where the women sat and made coffee and typed letters. And the men went underground and they were gone for 8 hours because once you go down, it's a full day shift down there.
There's not,
and
you know, I forgot my whatever and come back up.
And I haven't remembered that for many years, but yes, that happened too.
Wow.
So those were the days.
Yeah.
And but I don't know whether it's changed.
Oh, the mining industry. Well,
maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. But it could only have improved from then. But I still don't know if they're like women underground. It's just one of those things.
Yeah.
It's anyway.
Interesting.
I know. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have to look that up, actually. Now I'm curious. I'm picturing, this is just awful that I'm picturing this, but you remember Flashdance?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know how she was a welder by day?
That's right. But her body was in peak condition.
Oh, yeah, she was perfect. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's Eris. They've got these upper arms that you can, like,
and she was vengeful. She, like, I don't remember what she did. She threw a rock through his window or did something because she saw him with another girl having dinner. And Yeah.
I think if Eris is good, it's good for you because they will pull for you, they will support you, and they will champion you.
Yeah.
But if Eris is thwarted, then it will just discard you.
Scorned.
Well.
Not to be scorned.
The question has to be, how well do you use your Eris and how well integrated is it in your chart?
Right. Yeah, it's definitely something that you want to watch for the hard aspects.
Yes. So.
There's some soul searching.
I know. So where Eris is, you actually will be, that is your female warrior, will come out in that area. So in your chart, where's that?
sixth house, in my sixth house. And it's in Aries, obviously.
Work and career, here we go.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the fact that we're even doing this.
Yeah, there you go. It's conjunct, well, sort of conjunct Chiron. It's like 7 degrees. Actually, that's a conjunction. But it's kind of closely opposite Venus, which I think is a little troubling. Could ask my boyfriend, I guess. But I think that means that I fight for him.
You fight for love?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely. I'd kill for love. I would. I haven't, mind you. Let me just make that clear. But now I would.
Yes.
If I had to, you know.
No.
Yeah.
But it's there. It's six house work, daily stuff. So you're out there, what, pioneering maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you leading a team of women?
I just work and work and work.
You just, exactly, that's all you do, isn't it?
I'm kind of, like there's a nice warrior archetype, but then there's the, you know, the soldiers that are just in the trenches.
Like the pawns moving forward.
I sometimes feel like in the trenches.
The cavalry,
the grunts.
The artillery, or no, it's not even
the cavalry.
The feet people, what are they called?
The grunts. Yeah, I don't know.
It is. That will come to us.
It will tomorrow or later today. Yeah.
Yeah. So, because Eris is in Mars's sign, Mars has still got something to say.
Yeah.
And probably will while Eris is in Aries. And when Eris moves into Taurus, which I think is 2046,
I think. Oh, yeah. That's a long time off.
I can double check that. Only then will Mars lose its grip. The men will lose their grip over the...
Interesting. Yeah, that makes sense.
So...
That's not so far away.
No. Test tubes are coming, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
So it's kind of interesting how the mythology supports it, and yet it could go in so many ways, and it's still so new that we are actually bearing witness to the development of this Eris thing.
Yeah.
And the business with the glyph as well, that they've changed the glyph.
That bugs me. I don't know if I like the new one, to be honest. I mean...
Which one do you consider the new one?
Well, I don't like the arrow pointing straight down one. I like the idea of it, but if it was maybe a Mars glyph that was just pointing straight down, that would be great. But
that is. Okay. Is it not?
Well, it looks different.
Okay.
Okay, no, it's fine. Yeah, maybe what I'm getting mixed up on is just the arrow itself. I don't know.
Yes, it's like...
It's
limp.
Yeah. That's maybe it.
So... Now, when I started looking into Eris, they were using a different glyph, and it was the one where there was a vertical line and then two curves touching the line and coming out. That is the glyph for Eris. Now, that's on Solar Fire, that is the default glyph for Eris.
Yeah.
And for many years, I'd used that, but then I noticed the Mountain Astrology is now using this glyph, and that's why you really have to conform, because they do have a lot of influence. So that's why I've moved on to this glyph, and it maybe has a lot more to say about Eris's...
You know, okay, here's what it is. If you look at Mars, it's got a nice pointy little arrow point. And Eris is just kind of like, it's like a flower. It's like the stem of a flower. It's like a daffodil. You know? It looks like the leaves of a daffodil, if you look at it. The pointy part is just like kind of wide open and just like, bleh, you know?
You don't think that the Mars arrow is just, you know?
Well, it's... pointy.
The male.
Yes, I get what you're saying.
So women don't. Anyway.
I don't know.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
So there are two glyphs, and it can be confusing.
It can, yeah. Although, I mean, really, honestly, I was doing some research for this, obviously, and just trying to find much information at all, really, still, about Eris is not that easy.
Not much to be had, because unless Eris is really conjunct something in your chart, it doesn't even come into your life.
Yeah.
So you do have a conjunction, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Chiron is another sort of, like, redheaded stepchild of the zodiac.
Yes, yes, it is.
But, I like redheads,
but there it is. It's just kind of interesting. And if we look at other people's charts, I don't know if you have charts at your fingertips or anything.
I have one other one.
Okay.
I have Mr. Pink.
Ah.
But he doesn't seem to have... he has a square. No, that's not a square. That's a semi-square. Yeah, I'm not going to count that.
Yeah. So you want a good conjunction. You really do.
Yeah.
With Eris. And then it's going to...
Or you don't want, really, but... That's what you're looking for.
If you want to be able to tap into that actual archetype in your chart, because it's so far out, this planet is past Pluto.
Yeah.
If it's not really engaged in your chart, it's not going to have much to say.
Just like the
any outer planet, if it's not connected with a conjunction or on the ascendant, you're not going to notice it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not even, you can't even consider it a generational thing. You know, it's the whole era. Like, that's right. This century,
so, basically. But what's interesting today, I was looking earlier before I came up, that Eris today is at 22 Aries, right? Yeah. So it's hardly moved. It's moved like 10 degrees in our lifetime. But good old Uranus now is coming up to make the first conjunction to it. Uranus, I think, is about 12, 15. I'm not exactly sure today. So it will, during the course of the next year or so, actually make that conjunction and bring that into consciousness for astrologers.
Right.
So even though it has done the conjunction before, we never knew Eris was there.
Yeah. That's going to be interesting. Is that the first... it's the first of the outer planets. And I mean, Uranus has been pretty active recently. Like when it moved into Aries that day,
the tsunami.
Earthquake and tsunami in Japan. Awful.
So what's going to happen is as Uranus gets closer to Aries, the astrologers will be prattling away about that, and the noise will go, or how do you say it, the chatter will increase.
The chatter will increase,
and no doubt I'll be chattering, and probably you will too.
I think
making some comment about where it's going to be, because that's going to be 22 degrees. If that's sensitive, then that's in Aries. If you've got other planets on that, you're going to feel that conjunction.
Yeah.
So
if you 22 anything, degrees of any of the cardinal
yes.
signs.
So if you've got anything at 22 degree cardinal.
Yeah, not me.
You will get that. And then, of course, not following on after Uranus has made the conjunction, a couple of years later, we've got Pluto moving up to square, just for good measure.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So stuff can happen.
It's all go, isn't it, out there? It's all go.
Yeah. ladies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Load your weapon. I don't know
how to say sharpen it. Your, yeah, exactly.
Gear your whatnots and then, you know.
Yeah, but for honor, for the, you know, the good fight.
Huh. It's like you see women now, everyone's wearing army boots, aren't they, this time?
Oh, yeah. They're comfortable that I used to wear. I had a pair. Actually, I came by mine, honestly. I had a really good friend that was in the army, for real. And she gave me a pair of her old boots, and I used to wear them to my step aerobics class, because this will tell you how long ago it was, early 90s, in college. But anyway, so I wore these boots, and at one point, someone actually at the gym tried to tell me that these were not, like, ergonomically correct for doing step aerobics, and I said, these are from the army. Do you not think that they know a bit about exercise and proper foot support? And they never bugged me after that, but I thought that was a little funny. Mm-hmm. Like, really, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That was a fun class, though. I will just come right out and say that I'm against exercise. Personally, for my own personal, I don't get anything out of it. I don't do it at the moment for the last, I don't know, 15 years or so.
No gym.
I just say no to gym. Yeah. Actually, when we looked at this apartment, they tried to show us the gym, and I was like, nah, I don't even need to see it. Nice to know it's there, but don't even show me it. But in college, I did go to the gym, and the class that I went to, the only class that I purposely went to, like twice a week, was actually taught by a girl who had been in the army in Israel. she spoke with a very thick accent. She was very, very tough, and her classes were like 2 hours, and it would start out with like 40 people just going crazy, and then by the end of it, it would be like 3. And I was usually one of them in my army boots.
Oh, those were the days.
Yep. But that's, a little heiress moment there.
Well, there you have it.
There you have it, exactly. You have a book about Mars.
I do.
Yeah. I don't have a book to review in this particular edition, but...
Okay, then I will definitely... Okay, so the book I'm reviewing... this time is The Mars Book by Donna Fantone, A Guide to Your Personal Energy and Motivation. This was written many years ago, 20-odd years ago.
Okay.
Last year it was reissued and with extra bits and bobs, but this is the original copy I've got here. And of course Donna lives in Toronto and runs the SOTA, and I've got a lot of admiration for her as an astrologer and an organizer and everything. So this is quite an interesting Mars book. It's slightly cookbookish. You've got the Mars in your... Mars in the houses, Mars in the signs, and then we have Mars aspects. And then she goes on a little bit about Mars positions in major cities.
Oh,
so
interesting.
How Mars, because Mars is where you're...
Yeah.
Where you pioneer, where your action is. City of Mars, isn't it? If I'd have been more on it, I would have picked out Vancouver before we even started.
Do they have Vancouver?
As I say, if I'd have looked before I started, I could probably have picked it up. Anyway, so you go through here, and they've got the Mars positions for all of the main cities, Las Vegas and places. Most of them are in America, to be honest. And she's talking about how that affects you and the actual energy levels. Then you've got retrograde, Mars under stress. It's really quite a good Mars book. I would say it's quite a beginner's book, beginners to intermediate, because you can pick this up, read it, and use it.
Yeah, just look at your chart, see what's...
Mars in Cancer, and wherever your Mars position is, Mars in Taurus, you've learned to be a hard worker. There you go.
Well, yeah.
And we do know this is true for you.
We will.
And you can keep your energy going and so on. So it's a lot of talking about where you expend your energy, where it gets you off the couch, and where you are active in your life.
Yeah. Even so in Taurus, that's
so
I always think of Mars and Taurus as Ferdinand the Bull. I don't know if you're familiar with this story, but you've got children, so I'm guessing you might be. It's a bull who's in Spain, presumably.
Yes.
And he's raised to be a bullfight, like a bull in the fights, but he doesn't want to fight. He just wants to smell the flowers. And so he lies in the field and he smells the flowers. And and that's Ferdinand the Bull. That's exactly what I picture when I think of Mars and Taurus, because it's just this... It's a big giant bowl, but just wants to smell the flowers.
Yeah, so Mars and Taurus, how does that work for you? It's not that well placed, is it? Can't be. It's in
Venus.
No,
well, I don't like exercise, and I don't like conflict.
It's opposite. It's sign of rulership, so it's in detriment.
Yep.
So probably not very effective. And you do say you don't go to the gym. Would you say you're an aggressive type?
I wouldn't say aggressive. I would say...
assertive?
No, not really.
No, I'm not even that. Say that either.
Defensive, maybe. Let's see. passive aggressive, maybe sometimes opinionated, certainly.
But you're not going out there beating drum, being loud, vulgar.
No.
Being
goodness.
No.
No, I can jump to the defense of someone if I am fortunate enough to be, you know, in the right moment at the right time, at the right place, when duty calls for that to happen. And I'm super proud of the few tiny little moments where I've actually had the opportunity to do that.
So it's not a very
more proud of myself than I should be for these, you know, for what yes. it was. But yeah, no, I...
So that Mars is not particularly strong for you, really?
No.
But that's okay. I mean, we don't all have strong Marses.
Yeah.
So what are we saying? Do you have a stronger Eris, do you think?
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably a little stronger. Just because it's not, you know...
Bit of a feminist, detriment. Don't you?
Oh, yeah, that. Certainly. Yeah. I mean, I think Virgo's a good feminist sign, too. It's the lone, you know, feminist. The lone feminist that's a kind of an introverted, quiet feminist. She's not going to pioneer for your rights necessarily, but she's going to get the job done for herself, kind of.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, also Mars being in the seventh house is a little bit of a weird placement, I think, as well. Because that means that, for me anyway, the Martian energies that I am able to marshal yes. tend to be expended in the relationship.
Oh, how exciting.
Which, I mean... Well, one could say that, or one could say, geez, you guys fight a lot, or not fight, argue.
Which one could.
One could if
Let
one
me
was
tell the listeners,
be...
one could say that.
But it's funny. It's like the way that kittens fight with each other, you know? They just...
It's banter.
Yeah.
But it's there.
If you ever see kittens, you know, they'll bite each other and they'll scratch each other, but it's like they're just play fighting. They're just sharpening their claws so that they can go into the real world.
Only with him. It's not with the guy walking down the street. You're not picking on the guy on the corner.
Gosh, no. Unless he picks on me. Mm-hmm. If he picks on me. Better watch it. I carry a sharp umbrella.
So you energy with your partner, basically.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Yeah. It really is that simple.
You know, and with just the, I guess, the sort of bull-like, you know, endurance of plodding along. With work, with that kind of stuff. It's more of an endurance Mars than a charge
than a
Mars. Yeah.
You can do the marathon.
It's not so much the follow me as you charge up the mountain. It's like, fine, get on my back. I'm going up there anyway.
Like the tortoise and the hare. You're not the hare, but you're the tortoise. That's Mars and Taurus.
Yeah. Oh, and it really helps that my Chinese sign is the ox.
Okay.
Yeah, that's another... bowl thing. Although I picture the Chinese ox as it's a water ox is my first year. And I picture that as one of those water buffalo guys from in Africa. You just see these pictures of them. They always just look miserable. Or in that Battle of Kruger video on YouTube that was so fantastic.
Oh, yes.
Poor little
real
cow
buffaloes.
Thing. And yeah, like water buffaloes. Yes, that's what I picture when I think of my...
Yes. Well, that's where they get mozzarella cheese from, isn't it? From the milk from water buffaloes.
No, they don't.
Oh, yes, they do.
Are you joking?
That's not right. What do you think it comes from? Cows?
No, yes!
No!
Golly.
Golly gosh, so who knew?
I didn't.
Yeah!
Gosh.
So, anywho.
I'm just all blown away by that. That's amazing.
Okay, so that's where they grow them. That's where they have herds of them here in North America.
I didn't even know they had herds of them.
Okay.
Wow.
We're getting sidetracked.
We are, yes. That's...
So there we have it, your Mars and Eris expression in through your chart, through the sign and the house and everything.
Yeah, very important.
Seems to me that the Eris could be stronger in your chart.
Oh, in my chart, yeah, I think so, a little bit. But it's interesting how they kind of mirror each other, I think.
Yes.
Just the Mars in the seventh house and the Eris opposite Venus.
That's right.
Similar
so
energies.
So if we look at Mr. Pink's Mars and Eris, say for instance, because now this is a male chart, where's this Mars? Just remind me.
Oh, his Mars is in the 10th house, and it's in Leo. Ah! That's a happy Mars. That's a big, flashy, happy Mars. It's like Apollo, the sun god Mars.
Red-blooded.
Yeah.
Makes an entrance.
Flashy. Makes an entrance. Yeah.
Not to be ignored.
Not to be ignored.
Do not ignore me.
Yep.
So his Mars is working on full throttle. And where's the Eris?
It's also in the sixth house. And in Aries, clearly. But it is not actually aspecting a whole lot of anything.
Okay.
Yeah. Sort of trying to.
So again, that would be slightly more background.
Yeah.
If he's not aspecting, not engaged, you don't get to access it really well.
Yeah.
And a male chart, he probably uses the Mars every day.
With Mars in the 10th house in Leo, you don't need any other thing. No.
You don't need to get in touch with your feminine side, do you?
I mean, no. But he's got Libra rising, so that's, you know, be in touch with the feminine side, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah, totally.
But I'll put this book up on the, in fact, I'll let you know, I've already been on the website and got it on there. Get the book up, and I recommend this book. It's a great book, and, yeah.
And
from
Mars, the Mars book,
the Mars book by Donna Fontaine. Yes,
so we will link to that. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So that's pretty good, Corey.
Definitely. Well, thank you for joining us for Mars and Eris. This has been the Access Astrology podcast. You can find us at www.accessastrology.com. You can find us on iTunes. You can search.
Yes, we're on iTunes.
We are
right at the top on iTunes.
Totally.
Now.
You can find us by searching Access Astrology or just Astrology, and you will find us within the first few.
Yes.
You can email us at accessastrology@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter and follow us at Access Astrology.
Sounds good.
Access Astrology is produced and recorded by Roger Arantos. I am Arvin O'Neill.
And I'm Alison Price.
Thanks for joining us.
I'll see you next time.